Welcome, everyone, to another light and refreshing episode of Pop Culture Preservation Society. Short and sweet and unresearched and unscripted conversations we're bringing you as we work hard to also record season 17, which are researched and scripted a little bit and take up a lot more time than these do. So today we're going to play a little game. Are you guys ready?
I am.
I think so.
Okay, where I don't have to actually answer the questions. So I love these kind of games. So you all know how we love Remind Magazine, the print version, obviously, but also the website. It's a really fun place to catch up on pop culture newsy tidbits from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Both fun facts, but also current news that pertains to those decades. Like this short read from a couple of days ago titled, Helen Hunt Reveals Her Thoughts on That Infamous TV Movie Role.
Oh,
talking about Desperate Lives. I mean, come on, you guys. We've got to do an episode
called? I didn't
on
even
that.
Know what the title was.
I didn't either. I think it says in there, it's like that Angel Dust movie. And before all her well-received roles, if you might remember, Helen Hunt played a teenager so affected by the drug PCP, or angel dust, that she launches herself from a second-floor window, bounces off the pavement, and starts slashing at her wrist with shards of broken glass.
Oh, my God. So dramatic.
So yes. I think you guys, coming up in a season or two, we need to dedicate an entire episode to this TV movie and see if we can get Helen Hunt to come on.
It's iconic. It's time for her, for her to come on and recognize and accept the award for the iconic status of that moment of flying out of the plate glass window.
And because she was just talking about it in a Remind Magazine article from like last week, we know she still gets asked about it. She's still very willing to talk about it. Anyway, I digress. One thing I love to do when I'm killing time is check out the quizzes on Remind's website. Honestly, they're a great mix of easy questions, so you feel really good about yourself, and challenging questions, so you either feel good about yourself, or you can say, if you get them right, or you can say, oh, come on, who would even know the answer to that? That's so hard, right? So I thought it would be fun to give you, Carolyn and Kristen, and the listeners, a couple of the quizzes I recently took on Remind Magazine. Do you guys think
this will be funny because this will be a perfect example of where listeners are going, God, I can't believe you're not getting this.
Well,
angel dust.
Here's what I want to remind you, Carolyn and Kristen. I want to remind you to first give the listeners time to think of the answer in their head. Because I'm going to give you multiple choice.
Hard. Oh, my God.
So I want you to – I'm not – you. Listen, just take some time to –
We can work together, too, right? Like, Carolyn, we're not competing.
I mean, I think you guys do what you want to do. Why don't you guys do what you want to do? Why don't you guys talk amongst yourselves and you come up with what you think?
We need to chat about it if we can't come up with it.
So the first quiz I'm going to give you is, how well do you know the television show The Waltons?
Carolyn.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, just what I love, again, about this podcast is I loved so many things growing up, but I don't have sometimes the memory of the specifics that you guys have.
Okay.
So, you know, I could name all the Waltons, but if you're going to ask me, like, you know, about a specific episode, I don't know.
No. Well, maybe the two of us together
work together.
Be able to figure
I'm going to make you feel better. I didn't watch that. I didn't watch The Waltons. You know, I have knowledge of it, but I might have watched a handful, and I only missed two.
Good. Okay.
That should give you a better.
We're going to do okay.
Okay. In what state was the Waltons' fictional mountain area community of Waltons Mountain located? A, Kentucky. Don't forget to give time to the listeners. I see them both like, you guys,
we
if you can see
this,
they're
both
like. Need
any choices.
B, Tennessee. The listeners might.
I know. Good for
this
them.
Is also, this podcast episode today is supposed to be enjoyable for all listening, not just you guys. Okay. A, Kentucky, B, Tennessee, C, Virginia, or D, West Virginia?
See, no, this is, I'm going to let Carolyn answer because I've had difficulty with this, to be truthful, because I would get things like Charlotte and Charlottesville mixed up as a child.
Okay,
So listeners,
lead me down the wrong path.
Listeners, lock in your answers now. And Carolyn, what's the answer?
Yes, this is going to be my final answer because I am sure that this is C, Virginia.
Correct. Good
job.
And
I always thought it was West Virginia. I don't know why.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
But it had something to do with Charlotte and Charlottesville, even though Charlottesville is even
Charlotte. Yeah, Charlotte, I was going to say Charlotte's in North Carolina, and that wasn't one of the
choices. It's not one of the choices. I'm just confused as a child.
There okay. You go. Okay. The next one you guys are going to know too, but our listeners might not, and it's fun for them to play. So let's give them time. Which Walton's character was based on series creator Earl Hamner Jr., who also narrated the show's openings and closings as an older version of the character? A. Jason Walton. B. John Boy Walton Jr. C. Ben Walton. Or D. James Robert Jim Bob Walton.
I think this is a perfect opportunity, Carolyn, for you to tell the story about dropping the Earl Hamner reference in our writing group. Okay,
I would be happy to.
It was a moment for us.
Yes, it was. I mean, this podcast wouldn't exist if it wasn't for that moment. Mm-hmm. Would you like to provide the correct answer, though, to our question now? I think the listeners have had enough time.
The real answer is John Boy.
Correct.
Yes. John Boy. Yeah. Yes. So very quickly, yes, Earl Hamner Jr. is the creator of the Waltons. And I lived in Virginia for a while and worked where Audrey Hamner worked. And Audrey Hamner and I would carpool around the Blue Ridge Mountains for our job. And it dawned on me one day as she was sharing that she was Earl Hamner's sister. And so she was the Erin character of the Waltons. I was sharing this story in writing group, and I said something to the effect of, I was with Audrey Hamner, that's Earl Hamner's sister, you know what that means. And it was kind of fell on dead ears, except for deaf ears, not dead ears, deaf ears. That too, probably too. I probably bored everybody to death with my story. But yes, Kristen's eyes just lit up, and she knew who Earl Hamner was, and she tells the story that, you know, that's when our relationship just began, probably.
I always say you had me at Earl Hamner. The two people in the room.
I feel like that needs to be a t-shirt.
Earl Hamner. And then on the back, Carolyn's will say, I saved the Waltons.
Yes. Right.
Okay. All right. We're two for two.
Yes, you are. John Boy was the oldest of the seven Walton children. Who was the youngest? A. Elizabeth. B. Mary Ellen. C. Erin. D. Jim Bob.
Okay, so this will be interesting. Carolyn, did you have a special affinity for, shall I give the answer or shall you give the answer?
Listeners, are you all ready? Let me just check with our listeners. You guys, over there, and then let's see, in Tennessee and Oregon, in their last bus. Yes, okay, we're good.
Okay, you can give the answer, Carolyn.
No, you can't.
Okay, the answer, the youngest Walton was Elizabeth Walton. And so my question to you, Carolyn, is did you feel a special affinity for Elizabeth? Was she your Walton?
Erin was my Walton, believe
Erin
it or not.
Erin was your Walton. Okay. And was that because of your age?
Yeah, probably. I mean, she to me was, no offense to the other female Waltons, but she was the cutest to me and just kind of seemed the most, if I had to live in the Depression era house and live a life, it was going to be Erin's life.
Choose your Depression era character. Who would you be? It's like Sex in the City. Which one of the Waltons would you be?
What does this say about you?
You're such a Mary Ellen.
I certainly watched enough of them to, I just didn't watch it like you guys did. But yeah. I could answer your question. Yes, I definitely was all about Elizabeth.
Yep. She was the cutie. She was. And I always felt like I was the little one, and she was the little one. Well, and it just made sense.
And isn't that Cammie Kotler?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We've had her on the podcast.
That's right.
If you guys have been listening to these the past few weeks, you know we're going to always have an episode that relates to whatever we're talking about, and we do. Yeah. It was from last Halloween or two Halloweens ago, I believe. We had, I don't even know, how many years ago was that now? But we have Cammie Kotler on to talk about when her Raggedy Ann doll
crawled across the floor.
It becomes haunted and possessed, and there's a poltergeist.
That's because she's going through the changes, remember?
It was puberty.
Those damn hormones, y'all.
Puberty on Walton's Mountain was serious business.
And there was a poltergeist.
I feel like I waited my whole life. I think I waited 56 years to say the words, do you remember that time Elizabeth Walton had a poltergeist? And there are only a few people who would be able to go, oh my God, I totally remember that. And the Raggedy Ann doll was crawling across the floor. I feel like I've been waiting so long for that.
That's
moment.
A really fun conversation. You are listening. If you liked the Waltons, and especially if you remember Poltergeist on Walton Mountain, or like we like to call it, Puberty on Walton Mountain, Walton's Mountain, go back and listen to that episode. Okay. What was the name of the TV movie that introduced the Walton family and was so successful that it led to the Walton series? A, A Wedding on Walton's Mountain. B, The Homecoming, A Christmas Story. C, Mother's Day on Walton's Mountain. D, A Day for Thanks on Walton's Mountain. Listeners, lock in your answers.
Doesn't matter.
Now.
Okay, can we share?
Yeah.
The answer would be The Homecoming, A Christmas Story.
That is correct. Good job.
And that is the little nugget that we have about that, which you've heard in several episodes, is that Karen Grassley, who played Ma Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie, prepared for her audition for Ma Ingalls by watching The Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was channeling Olivia Walton,
and
even though Depression and Pioneer Days are not the same, but whatever.
Yeah.
Old-fashioned is old-fashioned.
Kristen, do we have an episode for that?
Yes, we do.
We do.
Karen Grassley was our first celebrity interview, our very first one. And we just about pooped our pants.
And
we
you did. Guys, she
it's
is
so cute.
It's really
as
cute.
Delightful as you would hope Ma Ingalls.
Remember when her doorbell rang?
It was the UPS man.
Yeah.
UPS man. Yeah. She's like, oh, I'll be right back. My doorbell rang and we can hear her talking to the UPS man.
I love it. Okay. Which U.S. president stated that he wanted to make American families a lot more like the Waltons and a lot less like the Simpsons? Was that A, Ronald Reagan, B, George W. Bush, C, Jimmy Carter, or D, George H.W. Bush?
George H.
Okay, I'm going to go with you. That's
once
not
again,
what
Kristen,
I would have said.
Let's wait for the listeners. I knew this was going to be an issue.
No,
I have
I'm
it written
eager.
In my notes.
I'm that kid in the front row with her hand raised.
Do you know this, or are you going like chronologically?
Know.
Okay, I thought you were going by like when with the Simpsons.
No, I remember it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay,
okay.
Good.
And all of us who watched The Simpsons were like, fuck off.
Yes, the answer is correct. It was George H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
Good job. That's one that I got wrong.
It was irritating at the time because if you were ever a Simpsons watcher, you're not meant to take it literally. It's sort of like Archie Bunker. It's meant to expose the difficulties in society. You're not supposed to want to be Bart Simpson.
Right,
right.
Learn from Bart Simpson. And so really the Waltons and the Simpsons are doing the same thing. But George H. didn't get that, I guess. I don't think he was watching a lot of TV. I don't know why he dared to say such a thing. He probably walked in on Jenna and Barbara watching The Simpsons and, you know,
smoking weed. Or someone gave him a sound bite and he thought it sounded
good.
They
said crap. They said crap in that show.
Yeah.
Hey, PCPS friends. It's Carolyn here. Did you know that I'm turning 60 this year? And to celebrate, I'm not buying a Trans Am or reliving my Aquanet years. I'm participating in the Chicago Marathon. And now before you picture me in one of those old Jane Fonda workout tapes with leg warmers and a sweatband, don't worry, I'll be wearing proper running shoes. Here's the real reason I'm doing this. I'm running to raise money for Down syndrome research through the Lumind Foundation. My inspiration is a very special little guy, my friend's grandson, baby Leo. Every time I lace up my shoes, I think of his smile. So here's where you come in. Just like we all chipped in for concert tickets or showed up with our quarters for Pac-Man, I'm asking you to show up for me and for Leo. Every donation, no matter how small, moves us closer to breakthroughs in Down syndrome research. You can find the link to donate in our show notes or head to the PCPS socials and click the link in bio. Help me make my 60th birthday about more than miles. Let's make it about love, hope, and the Gen X superpower of showing up. Because just like we learned from the Breakfast Club, we're stronger together.
Okay, what composer, also known for his film scoring, wrote the Waltons' memorable instrumental title theme? Was that A, John Williams, B, Jerry Goldsmith, C, James Horner, or D, John Barry?
Can you read the question again?
What composer, also known for his film scoring, wrote the Waltons' memorable instrumental title theme that you all were just singing? A, John Williams, B, Jerry Goldsmith, C, James Horner, or D, John Barry?
Carolyn, we have to discuss.
Okay. Well, that's,
and, I'm guessing, and listeners, this is the one, this is the other one you got wrong. Michelle, is it
is the one. Okay. How would you know that?
It's another part of the game. This is just another level of the game. Guessing which one.
Guess
Michelle
which ones
got
Michelle got wrong. Yeah.
Okay. Because this is what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Because they were saying well-known movie composer, I think it has to be a name that we know. And
correct.
There are only two names on there that I know.
Correct.
And that would be John Williams and James Horner.
Right. Who the hell is Jerry Goldsmith? I don't know.
No. Sorry, Jerry, but we don't know. You know, write Star Wars and then we'll know. So I'm leaning John Williams because that would be a real aha moment. That would be like, no way. I feel like otherwise, why would they include it on the test?
Correct. And this is, you know, Jaws would have been the year after because we learned that he wrote the theme song to Jaws, which I don't know if I even knew that. But I'm going to lean into John Williams. But if you want to say James Horner...
What did James Horner do?
I don't know. I just know his name.
I'm trying to think of styles right now.
Did he do like the Titanic or something?
Oh, yes. Yes, he did. Okay. And that leans more Waltons-esque. James Horner is Titanic. That is more. And John Williams is a little more staccato and anthemic. Okay, we're really getting in the weeds.
That's right. Final answer. Time is up, guys.
Okay. Shall we go with John Williams and see what happens?
Yeah, and we'll Lisa just accept isn't who wants to be a millionaire, and we're going to lose like $80,000 for the charity of children with, I don't know, no shoes or whatever. Okay.
We're going to go with John Williams.
Okay, final answer.
A final answer.
I will tell you who the hell Jerry Goldsmith is. He is the man who wrote the theme to the Waltons.
No way.
Are you kidding?
All that training for nothing?
Guess who what do you guys think I guessed?
You guessed John Williams.
I did guess John Williams for the exact same reasons you guys did.
Right.
I did the whole thing. And you guys, this is so pathetic because I sit here at my computer sometimes. I'm like, oh, I'm going to see if there's a new Remind Magazine quiz. And I agonize too. I'm like, could it be, I don't know, like as if I'm going to win
$1 million
or lose $1 million. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you just a couple more because we're going to move on.
Wait, we want to know how do we know Jerry? What else did he do?
Well, he wrote the theme from the Waltons.
And? Well, I know, but he's.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't say that here.
Oh, I thought you just said he looked up.
Well, yeah, someone else can do fact check.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it because that's important. That gives us a little context. So, Jerry Goldsmith, is that what I'm looking up?
Yes, Jerry
Goldsmith.
That just
sounds like a dentist or something.
Composer.
And you would think that we would have unearthed this or something in a past episode if he's a well-known filmmaker and we were talking, or film scorer person. So it's going to be movies we probably don't know. Like, I don't know.
He's got lots of awards. Star Trek, Rambo, Logan's Run, Planet of the Apes, Tora, Patton, Papillon, Chinatown, The Omen. We know all of these movies. Alien, Poltergeist, Gremlins, Hoosiers, Total Recall, Basic Instinct.
Amazing composer, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, way Jerry to go, Goldsmith. Jerry. Way Sorry to go, that. Jerry.
And you guys were correct about James Horner composing the theme from Titanic. Sad fact that I just pulled up is that he died when he was only 61. Oh. But besides Titanic, he wrote the score for the highest grossing film of all time, Avatar. He also was nominated for Oscars for his scores for Aliens, An American Tale, Field of Dreams, Apollo 13, Braveheart, A Beautiful Mind, House of Sand and Fog. And his other notable scores include Star Trek II, Willow, The Land Before Time, Glory, The Rocketeer, Legends of the Fall, Jumanji, Casper. It goes on and on. I mean, Karate Kid. That was a 2010 one.
But did you say so? Oh, sorry. Do you say the American Tale with our little Fievel?
Yeah.
Oh, and one of my favorite
Russian
songs.
Mouse.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, with Linda Ronstadt and
James
Peebo
Horner.
Bryson.
Mm-hmm. And, no, not Peebo. The guy from New Orleans. The guy from New Orleans with the big
Harry
muscles.
Potter,
no.
Oh, Aaron Neville.
Aaron Neville. Yeah. I was going to teleport like a big mole on his face, but I didn't want to go there. Oh, yeah. And he'd wear the cut-off jean jacket. He cut his sleeves because his muscles are so big.
The sleeveless jean jacket.
My arms won't fit in this jean jacket. I got to cut the sleeves off.
Jean jackets do have kind of slim arms, I would say, too.
Oh, okay. Come on.
I always feel like they're kind of tight across
also,
my chest.
It's not. It's James Ingram and Linda Ronstadt who sang it, guys.
Oh, that's right. Because he was on all my that. Mellow Mix, that song. Oh,
you know what? Yeah. Because he does, I don't know much, but right, I know Linda Ronstadt. I love you. Yeah, ooh, that's right. Another Linda Ronstadt song. Be
I need all the listeners. I need all the listeners to calm the F down right now because they've been yelling at you guys for like the past 8 minutes.
Yes. Sorry.
Okay, we're moving on to a totally different quiz now.
Okay.
And we are going to move on to TV moms. How much do you know about these very famous TV moms? Here we go.
Okay.
Question number one. What real life event was incorporated into the second season of I Love Lucy? Was it A, Lucy and Desi's honeymoon? B, Desi's hospitalization? C, Lucy and Desi's daughter's first word? Or D, Lucy's pregnancy?
Very historic.
Very historic. We talk about this when we talk about and want to, we have a related do we have an episode for this? Yes, we do.
What was the episode?
I'm trying to think. And we talk about I Love Lucy and Leave It to Beaver. Oh, it's reruns. Thank you.
Is
Thank
it?
God. Yes, it's reruns. Okay, okay. It's all the reruns we watched after school. So, guys, just go to the Googles to put Pop Culture Preservation Society reruns and that episode will come up. And what's the answer, Kristen?
The answer is when Lucy had a baby.
That's correct.
And good she job. Wore maternity clothes on. And it was very controversial because we like to pretend that ladies didn't have penises going in their vaginas and making them pregnant.
You know what is so crazy for my little mind is, one, you know, my parents sat down and taught me the birds and the bees or told me about them with that iconic purple book, How Babies Are Made. So I knew from a very young age how that kind of worked. And they do the penis and vagina thing all in that book. And so, and they also, if you remember, they had separate beds. They had two twin beds. So my mind would go, one of them had to go to bed. Yeah.
Status. That's accurate.
Exactly. Yeah. But it was like they had to be on top of each other kind of almost the whole time.
It's because like college.
In the book, you can't move. I know, but you don't know that when you're like seven. Or six or five or whatever. And so anyway.
Your parents slept in a big bed where they slept side by side.
So did the couple in How Babies Are Made.
Yes. So how was this going to work?
That's right. It really perplexed me.
What did Alice Cramden, played by Audrey Meadows, study to be on The Honeymooners? A, a teacher. B, a sales clerk. C, a bank teller. Or D, a secretary?
I feel like, okay, discussion time. I feel like it would be secretarial school. Like, that's what you would study to be.
Right. You would go to, like, the Katherine Gibbs School of whatever.
Mm, yeah. You I wouldn't agree. Study to be, what was the other thing you said?
Sales clerk.
Sales clerk, bank teller, or secretary.
I don't think it was a teacher.
Only single ladies would be teachers.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So your answer is D, secretary?
Yes.
That is correct. Good job.
Right. Yay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to skip down to a couple of other ones. Let's see. This is a good one. Where did Anne Romano, played by Bonnie Franklin, move her family to on One Day at a Time? A, Indianapolis. B, Columbus. C, Minneapolis. Or D, St. Louis?
I'm so glad you said move to because I leapt ahead and thought you were going to ask where they were moving from. And
oh,
I
no. Where
know.
Did you, where are they moving? And if you remember in the opening that we love, you can see the highway sign that tells you the directions.
This is it.
This is life. The one. Okay. Carolyn,
so
what's the answer?
Have a ball. It would be A, Indianapolis.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. Yes.
And I'm going to say right now, whoever's editing this episode, you can't put a clip in because this is PCPS Lite. Yeah. So no clips.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good Times, Florida Evans, played by Esther Roll, first appeared on what earlier sitcom? A, All in the Family. B, Maude. C, Rhoda. Or D, The Jeffersons?
We have an episode about this.
We do have an episode about that. You guys, it is a fun game. Listeners, we've said this before. We were all in Amherst and we met this couple out by the fire pit having a drink and telling them all about the podcast. And they started saying, have you guys done one on Purple Rain? And we're like, oh my God, come on, give us a hard one. Yes, we're from Minneapolis. What? And then they kept saying things and would go, yes, we have an episode. We kind of became like stump the PCPS. Yeah. Is there it's something I can think of that you have not done an episode on? And yes, there's a million things. We have a whole long topic list, but a lot of the times we have an episode for it.
So, the game is called We Have an Episode on That.
I mean, look how many related episodes we've come up with just through this organic, unscripted, unresearched.
Right.
Light and refreshing
conversation. And it's a cool story because we have an episode on that. We know that there's a cool story between her previous appearance on that show and then who she becomes on Good Times.
So what's the answer, Kristen?
The answer is Maud. She was Maud's housekeeper, but she lived, you know, Maud doesn't live in Cabrini Green in Chicago. So she lives in Tuckahoe, New York. That's nowhere near Chicago. And Esther Rolle at the time was married to James, who was a firefighter. We know that James Evans was not a firefighter. And they didn't move. So they just like conveniently changed her story utterly and completely.
Yeah.
And if I recall correctly, well, number one, Maud was never mentioned on Good Times ever. And I don't even think she was a housekeeper.
No, I don't know why they just couldn't have changed her name and have her
just
be
a
whole
a show.
Different character. Yeah.
Yes. She could be a different character.
I know. Okay. What kind of serious trouble did Marion, played by Marion Ross, once find herself in on Happy Days? A, she was in jail after crashing a car. B, she was hospitalized after having a stroke. C, she lost all her family's money to a con artist. Or D, she lied to Fonzie about who his mother was.
I mean, two of those are too serious for 70s sitcoms. They would never go – they would never have a stroke on a 70s sitcom. And
well, they made James die and they didn't even
– Yeah, good point. He just like, oops,
Florida
sorry,
just,
he died.
His husband just died.
In a car accident because we don't like him anymore. So, yeah, you can't have James Evans anymore. And I also don't think she would lose all their money. That's too serious.
Right.
So either she lied about his mother, but I don't know how she would – I don't recall an episode
there
in which –
There is some parental episode. I don't remember
about
if it was about
Fonzie's
his mom.
Parents?
Yeah. Okay. If it was like his dad was coming into town. I don't know.
Okay,
but I know there is something. Oh, okay. But I guess we go with A.
Yeah, but I feel like I can see a jail.
And she can see Mary behind bars. She looked like a jailbird, Cunningham.
That's sounding whiffy to me. I can sort of see it. And it was like in the grocery store parking lot or something like that.
Okay.
That is correct. It is.
Okay.
That is correct. I actually answered D, she lied to Fonzie about who his mother was, because in my memory, I was having a thing where Fonzie was really upset at Mrs. C for a long time. And I thought, oh, I bet that's what it was. And I couldn't remember. Okay, I'm going to give you one more because it looks like our time is up, guys. So this is our last question.
Okay.
Did you set a timer?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, but, you did? I was looking at this time. Oh, I didn't know you set it.
We have 13 minutes left.
Oh, perfect. Okay, good. We can. Well, yeah, let me just do one more. And then I do have another quiz, but I think this will be good.
Yeah, this is
okay. What did Carolyn Ingalls, Karen Grassley, our friend, our BFF,
Caroline Ingalls. Okay, people, why? Her name isn't Caroline.
I'm Team Caroline.
Caroline,
I'm Caroline.
And we asked her about that. And,
and she gave the wrong answer.
But what's funny is before we ask her about it, we all say it both ways if you listen to it back. What did Caroline?
But wait, I want to expand on that a little bit. Just wait. Let's wrap this up because we were all intensely curious about this, especially Carolyn, because her name's not Caroline. And in all of the printed material, it's Caroline. That name is called Caroline.
Correct.
And in the show, everyone says Caroline. Except Pa.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn.
He says Carolyn. And so when we ask Karen Grassley, is it Carolyn or Caroline? She says it's Carolyn. And we're all like, no, it's not. Did you not even know what your character was named?
Yes. Yeah. It's No, that's fine. Okay. What did Caroline Ingalls, Karen Grassley, do before marrying Charles, Michael Landon, on Little House on the Prairie? A, she worked on a farm. B, worked as a laundress. C, helped deliver babies. Or D, taught school.
She must have taught school.
I think she taught school. Yeah.
Those others sound made up.
I hope the listeners
Of course.
Just
she wasn't a laundress.
She's not a laundress. And I don't recall any farm stories either. I think we do have some interaction with her parents. Are there references to her parents?
I mean, and I guess if you Well, this is pop culture, that probably the TV thing. But yeah, there's references to her parents, and I think they come visit. But she was a school teacher.
Yeah, you're right. Correct.
Okay.
Ding, ding, ding. She was a school teacher. So if you guys like playing these types of little, you know, games to test your Gen X pop culture knowledge of television, it goes all the way up to the 90s, too. There was actually questions in that TV Mom's one about Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and some other 90s sitcoms. Go to remindmagazine.com. We talk about the print magazine all the time. We love it. I love to, after I've used it, to use it in like my little junk journals and stuff because it's so fun. But you guys, Remind Magazine loves the Pop Culture Preservation Society mm-hmm. as much as we love them. Nice. And they have a special deal for you. If you go to remindmagazine.com/PCPS, you can get an entire year for $12. That's a dollar an issue. I mean, that's amazing.
Magazine.
Yeah. For a dollar an issue. And it's like 83% off the cover price, because you can buy it at places like if you go to Barnes & Noble or places that sell like every magazine. But you're going to get it for a dollar. And I'm telling you, it's worth the $12. They have the most fun themes, like, you know, where are they now? But they'll have one that's all about the disco era, or one that's all about 80s movies or summer blockbusters or television, you know, sitcoms or something like that. So we get a lot of
stuff. Just imagine like inviting people over and then you give them these quizzes, right? When you have when you invite the boss over, like Mr. Tate, when Darren and Samantha have to have Mr. Tate over for dinner, and I always thought, that must be so uncomfortable. That's when you're going to get your Remind magazine out and give them a quiz.
Yeah. And look what, I mean, I had like two other quizzes ready to go, but look at the fun conversations it prompts.
Yes.
So it's great around the dinner table to ask people, because then people are going to start sharing their own memories and their own connections to these shows, or you're going to get into a really big argument and your guests are going to leave because they are like, she was a laundress. I'm not eating with you
it's
at
Caroline.
This table anymore.
It's Caroline. It's Caroline.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you, everybody, for enjoying this light and refreshing lemony.
Little lemony twist.
Little lemony conversation today. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie, where Caroline lives.
Cheers, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu, nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.